Hello, this is Greg. Welcome to another episode of Listing Bits. I've got a very special guest today, Mr. Michael Werzer of FBS. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Greg.
How's it going?
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here in New York for the Inman Conference.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you taking the time here. This is super cool.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think I know your story, a little bit about your story, but tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, that maybe listeners might not know about it. Your background or?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm president of FBS, which makes the FlexMLS system. We provide our FlexMLS software to about 185 MLS organizations, actually a little more than that, but some of them are not NAR affiliated. Some are
185?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a bigger number than I thought.
Just over 200,000 agents. So we've been growing a lot over the last 5 years, especially. It's been a great run, and we're excited for the next 5 and 10 and 15 years of MLS.
But you started out with something different, right? Weren't you like a lawyer for like hair care products or something like that?
that was my last legal job, and it was fun. A really good job. Aveda Corporation provided cosmetics and hair care products. They ended up getting bought by Estee Lauder. But yeah, really cool company, and I had practiced law for about 7 years total.
Mostly corporate?
Yeah. I worked at a law firm for most of the time defending publicly traded companies and class action litigation, but then ended up at Aveda. And at about that time, my dad called and said he wanted to retire, basically. And he had been doing MLS stuff for 20 some years. This is actually something I just thought of the other day. FBS is basically 40 years old, and my dad ran it for 20, and I've run it for 20.
Oh my God, really?
So yeah,
that's pretty great, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
40 years. I mean, yeah. I always just say this about, I think Rapitone's got a similar like 45 years or something. Hats off to your father and you. I mean, just keeping a company going that long. I mean, gee, many Christmas.
Yeah,
how difficult that is. As a technology company too, that's just fantastic, right?
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good business. I was just at this panel. The MLS is doomed. Is the MLS doomed? I guess they asked it as a question. Every year, Inman talks about how the MLS is doomed. I think a company like ours that's been around for 40 years, it shows what a good business this really is, that it's a stable business and that it's a business where you can thrive and grow, and that technology is important.
I bet you if I looked at a chart on when you took over 20 years ago, that the number of members are probably pretty close to hockey stick there though, right?
Yeah, I think when I took over, we had about 10,000 users.
Oh man, that's fantastic. That's a great story.
200,000 today, so it's been a lot, you know. And I mean, we had what was kind of interesting in that it was really a print oriented business, you know, 20 years ago. At least for us at that time, it was mostly print. We had lots of software too, but the agents wanted print for large measures.
These are MLS books, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we actually had quite a few employees. We probably had 50 employees at the time, but we took it down to around 20 employees, and today we have 100. So the company has grown a lot, both in terms of customers and employees as well, but that makes it a fun business for sure.
So going back to like your background as an attorney, I mean, besides the obvious things like, oh, I can read agreements or write agreements, that training you had as being a practicing lawyer, anything you brought into your role that, you know, you can look back that has helped you kind of do this?
You know, first of all, I loved going to law school and I liked being a lawyer. So if that makes any sense, but I always enjoyed going to school. And I think having that experience helped me be a good writer first and foremost, because you spend a lot of time writing as a lawyer, but then generally a communicator too. You know, I never spent a lot of time in court, even though I did litigation. The type of litigation I did never ended up in court. The stakes were always too high. So I didn't have a lot of big presentation skills or anything from it, but definitely just generally being able to communicate well. And there's a certain method of thinking that kind of comes with legal analysis and legal writing that I think is useful in any endeavor.
Right.
And I did corporate stuff, so it certainly helped you understand business and seeing, I had lots of different corporate customers that had different business models, and you always had to understand their business really well. So it gave you, it's sort of like being a consultant in some ways, and how you can learn a lot about different businesses just from engaging with them. So it was a great background.
Yeah, I think
something I've enjoyed, even though I don't practice law at all.
Right.
It's helped a lot.
I mean, I think that's to me like your writing really inspired me to start Vendor Alley, right? You started blogging about what you were doing and the kind of things that you were doing at FBS with Flex and everything. And I think a lot of people would read that. It was kind of inspiring as far as what you were trying to do there. And then you were communicating to everybody. You know, this is back, you know, 2004-ish, 2003-ish. And I just remember reading that stuff. And like a peer was doing something in MLS, whereas before it seemed like these were these big bygone, like, you know, More Data and, you know, PRC, these big companies that you really didn't have any relation to. But you coming in there was like somebody that you kind of knew, and you blogging about, writing about that experience was I think really helped you with your business
too.
Yeah,
I think it did too. Yeah, I do. It's kind of interesting because I don't write hardly at all anymore on the blog, which is disappointing to me. And I keep trying, but it was an interesting time in that, you know, it was really 2006, 2007, and blogging was big back then. And there was a huge community, especially in real estate. We all got to know each other kind of online, and it was really popular, at least within a sphere of people. And then that, you know, blogging sort of died down a little bit, or is being transformed into some other things like podcasting and other things. So I still think there's that community building going on. It's just transforming a little bit with Facebook and other channels. But the other big thing that happened, so the part of why I think I don't do it as much anymore is because, you know, people stop commenting and there just isn't as much of the community there as you used to see. But secondly, I was really about standards, and that's why I was writing at the time,
right,
hammering away at that over and over and over again. My first blog post was like death of the MLS ? Which is, you know, funny given what my earlier comment about the panel, but I kind of wanted to make the point, you know, that it's silly that people keep asking this question. And so I delved into, you know, what MLSs do and really where the MLS needed to go. And again, hammering away on the need for standards. And so I was the first chair of the RESO organization and the Real Estate Standards Organization. And that was right at that time. I think I got Mark Leswing appointed me into that position, partly because I had been this voice.
Right.
You know, again, hammering away at these issues, trying to get the industry to move in that direction. And so I think it was really useful. And now I feel like if I write more, I'm just saying the same things. I'm kind of repeating myself. And so I've kind of stopped a little bit, but I keep thinking of ways. I don't have the dirt that you always seem to have on Vendor Alley. But isn't that the byline of it? It's like,
yeah, where real estate gets its dirt. Yeah.
Where real estate gets
that's
its
like,
dirt.
I'm actually proud of that subline. That
no, that's a good. Is a I good, love it.
Yeah,
I totally
the
love
dirt,
it.
Real estate. I mean, it all
no, it
good.
Totally makes sense. And you do an awesome job, but it gives you constant content that's, I think, you know, valuable to the industry.
I think to me, I just
people listen to
it's
that.
A lot of links a lot of times. So just, I think linking and then having just a couple sentences is actually. It helps me be consistent because if I had to do like, what's the saying? Sorry, this is so long. I didn't have time to shorten it. Right.
I mean, it's, I used to get grief for that all the time. Like you write too much, your blog posts are too long. I can't, I was like, well, it is who I am and it's what I do. And that's the purpose of this. I'm not shortening it up, but it was just a totally different thing than what you're after. But it sort of goes along with it when you think about just the transition from blogs and towards Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, where everything is shorter. You know, who wants to read a 12 paragraph Facebook post? Nobody. I mean, you know, put your picture up there.
A meme of some type.
Right? Yeah.
But I mean, I think there's more to your story than just, you know, the standard stuff, because I think I wrote about this last year of, you know, it seemed like the industry discovered APIs, right? Like last year.
Yeah.
Right. And I had to make the point that you guys with the Spark platform have had this thing. I think it was 4 years before that. Right. And it's like everybody finally caught up to this concept that you were kind of laid out before. Right. And wrote about and things like that.
Yeah, for sure.
And it still has some catching up to do. Right. With some of this technology innovation you've done over at FBS.
Yeah. I think it's a fascinating time for the industry. You just showed me a demo of your Cloud Attract product. And it's an interesting case, right? Where you're generating leads, but you made the point that you don't want to be a CRM. You're going to connect with other CRMs. Well, you need APIs to do that. And it's not one product or two products or 10. There's literally dozens of hundreds of products that brokers and agents need that data to move easily and simply. And so there's a real need for standards and good APIs that make that stuff happen. It's a lot of heavy lifting to get people to cooperate and to work together, but it's what the brokers and agents need. And those are all our common customers. And so it really pays for people. I mean, even today, with all the investment that's going on, there's so much pain to the broker and agent of not being able to move that data, whether it's listing data or contact data or search data or whatever it is. It's a huge pain. And I think it's a bit embarrassing, really, that the industry doesn't do a better job of solving it. But certainly other industries as well have the same problems. And it's always this issue. Do I try to buy some behemoth solution that does everything? Or do I have specialized products that then figure out a way to work well together so that I can have a tight workflow without double, triple, quadruple entering data and having mistakes? I remain a big fan of APIs because I think it's the more elegant technical solution. But the challenge is you got to get those vendors to work together, and that's difficult.
Yeah, I mean, Dan says this all the time, and I've said this. I think one of the main reasons for Cloud CMA's success was he had built an API in the beginning because we didn't have a search interface back then, right? So being able to go from do your search on your MLS, click a Cloud CMA button and have those listings, really listing numbers, and then do a query back. But that integration put us on the map in a way because we could be in the agent's workflow because we knew at that point we were never going to do anything as robust as the MLS search, right?
Right.
So, but our API is really, I think, a big reason for the success of Cloud CMA in that regard. So we were always big believers on that.
Yeah, those integrations are key. And they're key to the user, which I think is the most important thing. I mean, they need it to be easy for sure, but they need it to be efficient. Easy is where they don't have to think about that stuff. And honestly, today, they don't think twice about having to double enter the data. That's kind of the sad state we're in. They just like accept that things are not going to integrate. And I just think that's not the way it should be.
Yeah. So what do you, so there's like a lot of initiatives now, right? That, I mean, if I'm an MLS vendor, I've got to like, just like either shake my head or it gives me a stomach ache or makes me not sleep or just roll my eyes. You've got things like AMP, you've got things like Upstream. There really hasn't been any really new vendor people going into becoming a full-blown MLS vendor. I mean, anything about these initiatives that excite you, like cause you concern or have an opinion on?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have opinions, and that's a huge swath of territory in one thing. But, you know, AMP and Upstream, they're two totally separate things, even though they have a single technology vendor currently with RPR. You know, I think they're different leadership groups and different products. One's a broker product, one's an MLS product. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding around those products, honestly, even though there's been a lot of repetitive communication at industry events like this or the NAR conferences or CMLS or whatever. I feel like a lot of people still have a lot of questions about what does it mean? What do they do? And, you know, is it going to kill the MLS or is it some? I mean, there's just all this stuff. So I think there's a lack of understanding about what they really are. And AMP simply is just another MLS competitor. Well, it is different than what we do or what CoreLogic or Black Knight does in that really it's just a back end. There's no front end, right, for that. So it's just that piece. And you go to I think Rapitoni is one and maybe a few others that might provide a front end to that. And so it's really two separate contracts that you got to do the one. Whereas if you come to one of the vendors like us, you get both in one package. But it's API driven just like ours is. And so it's yet another vendor.
Yeah, I think that their go-to-market strategy is going to be interesting to see how they roll that out, right?
Yeah, and it's complicated. Think about it. I mean, and it's no disrespect to that company. They're going to do fine, I'm sure. But there's just a lot of angst and tension around anytime people say that. And it's like they have no implementations yet. I mean, if it was any other vendor besides a NAR-driven entity, they wouldn't even be getting the time of day, right? I mean, it's just, would any serious MLS implement as their frontline MLS system some that's never been implemented ever before? It's very, very unlikely that they're going to do that. They're going to have to go through several implementations and several test markets, and that's going to take a long time before they're proven enough to get any sort of critical mass adoption. And it's only when you get that you can have some sort of transformative impact on the industry. So really talking years and years before
anything
comes of it. And it may, but my point is I don't sit around thinking about that. I think about, you know, frankly, I spend a lot more time thinking about what WR Studios is going to be doing because you guys provide great products and some of those are competitive to products we provide. So I think about that. I certainly think about our other competitors, CoreLogic and Black Knight and Rapitoni and others all the time. They're all good companies and doing things right now that are live and that we have to contend with. You know, Upstream is a great initiative. I hope they get some implementations with MLSs going. I know they've done a lot with third-party products, and that's really cool stuff. I think you guys have done something with them a little bit, or
not really.
No. Pulled some data. Or it was AMP, I think you were trying to do.
Yeah, AMP we did some stuff with, yeah.
But I assume the API is probably the same. I think Upstream is showing that they can provide listing information to third-party products. Yeah, it'll be cool to see, you know, once they get to doing it with MLSs.
I just never got a really good taste in my mouth with the way that whole initiative started. This, you know, you got 10 days left and this anti-MLS sentiment that they had. And really, it was like, you know, find the MLSs that weren't providing data or not behaving correctly, and we'll go fix that, right? But for the most part, you know, there's a lot of MLS providers being run by very smart people who keep in touch with their brokers, and they're fine. But, especially like the Realty Alliance was always very quick to criticize. I mean, their Facebook page was like some sort of like a propaganda machine railing against the MLS, right? And then I look at now where, you know, there's things like Bright MLS and other initiatives are going on where, you know, the MLSs have been listening. I think those initiatives were started before this kind of nonsense. But still, do you hear anything from those organized kind of places like Realty Alliance or when they're saying, well, you know, hey, thank you. You know, it looks like MLSs are listening. No, it's just they're silent, right? So I just wish those guys would just.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it would be nice to have. Well, let me just rephrase it a little bit. It's separate from that. I think there's a very positive message to be put out about MLS organizations generally. Like you said, the vast majority of them are providing value or they wouldn't exist. I know a lot of people look at MLS as though it's a monopoly. And in some cases, I guess it could have those impacts. But the reality is anybody can start an MLS anytime, anywhere. There's no real restrictions there. It's the fact that the brokers in a given market have decided to cooperate together. Right. And sometimes that becomes, in a given market, there are multiple MLSs covering that territory and you have overlapping markets. But the point is, hey, they're providing a value and the market eventually is going to figure out what the right size of those MLSs are or are not. And I think the angst in the industry is about impatience with the market. You know, I think the MRIS Trend merger is a really good example. Well, that's the market responding to the needs of the brokers in that area, and good for those leaders that are bringing that together. But the idea that there's going to be a forced kind of, hey, we're going to create 30 MLSs by 2030 or anything like that, I just think let the market do its job. That's the way that we've traditionally done things in this country, and competition is good. And I think there can and will be competition in and around the MLS space. And we should be patient because most brokers and most MLSs are completely satisfied with what they have. It's those brokers that are in those markets where they have to be in multiple ones. And it's really at the franchise and what I'll maybe call the super broker level or brokerage level. Most individual brokers are just fine. They're covered by one MLS. But there are certainly some brokerages and bigger companies that deal with a lot of pain as they try to nationalize their technical infrastructure. Those things are going to get solved by standards because it doesn't matter if it's 12 MLSs or 30 or whatever the number is, those big national entities are going to still have those problems if those groups don't have standards. So that's why standards is the true solution. Mergers are good on a local level, and that's fine. Let the market again figure that out. But that doesn't change the need for standards at all.
So I was going to ask, you know, my next question would be like, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing this industry? I mean, you've been on this standards. I mean, is it still standards, you think? Is that still our biggest challenge?
Yeah, my kick, and I should probably start writing more about this and being more vocal about it, because I don't think this is clear enough to people. It's not the creation of standards that's the issue. It's the implementation. It's actually getting adoption, getting utilization, getting the vendors to publish the information according to the standards, and then getting people to use that information. So we've been spending tons and tons of capital to help make this happen for all of our customers. I know our competitors are doing that. And it's a massive lift to get all these different MLS organizations mapped over to the dictionary, getting the APIs published in the right way. But the next year to 2 years of implementation is going to be huge for the industry. And I don't think enough attention is being paid to how much effort is required in the kind of industry-wide cooperation that's required to get that to happen. Because we've done a great job of publishing standards and now use them. Everybody's got to be start to use these things to get the benefit.
I mean, for us, I mean, we've already got an aggregation system going, and then to switch all that over just to something that, you know, is a standard kind of thing, there's like a cost benefit there for us that we have to figure out to like really make that jump. I mean, yep. I'd love for us to kind of be a leader, and we try to be a leader in a lot of things, and maybe that's one way we can kind of like help out things there.
Yeah. I think you'll see that there will be some, I think over the next year or so, you will see a few really shining star cases that are going to prove the value of this with us, with Spark, or hopefully CoreLogic with Trestle. In theory, you should be able to say, hey, I want to get just with us. That's 200 or so MLSs roughly. And CoreLogic has got another, 150 or something like that, and a lot more users. You should be able to get a standard fee to cost all of those from two different APIs in one shot. That's a huge difference in what's been before.
I think
a lot of the proof will be in the pudding.
Yeah, I think what might happen is you'll see, and I mean, still, we could talk about permissioning, which is still like, you know.
Yeah, that's a great
another
topic.
Elephant in the room. But the big benefactors of this type of work are going to be the guys downstairs in that startup alley.
Yeah. Right? New implementations.
And I think what's going to happen is that vendors like myself, and to a large degree you, we have this moat around us, you know, of having to have relationships and all this other stuff to kind of get that MLS data. But once that becomes easier and frictionless or less friction, these new guys are going to be able to ramp up very quickly. You know, I was showing you that Cloud Attract thing. And the one thing about it is it doesn't require MLS data. Right. So this is the first product I ever released where I can go to our 300,000 agents and say, hey, this is available to try. Right.
Yeah. That's cool.
I've never been able to do that before. So I'm very excited about now, you know, it's all a percentage game. So whether I'm launching an MLS that has 10,000 people or being able to go to 297,000, I mean, that's going to be a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, the permissioning thing, let's not go too deep here.
Sure.
I've been a gadfly about this a lot, but I don't have a solution, right? One solution would be like, well, let's just pick these certain vendors, that have been around a while, right? And, you know, give them access, you know, special access. You have to be in the club, right? Mm-hmm. But then, you know, if I'm a new guy and I've been that new guy, I've been that guy in the garage, well, that sucks for me, right? Any ideas, any fresh? I mean, you guys, I think, do it the best, right? Because if you're included in that Spark platform, permission is also kind of implied.
Yep.
But beyond that, I mean, how can we, what other ways can we fix permissioning?
So that's like vendor level permissioning. And I think that's really important. I think an interesting.
If it takes me one day to set up a feed, but 6 months to get permission to use it, what problem have we solved with standards?
Yeah. No, I hear you, man. I totally hear you. It makes a lot of sense. And that is huge. And what I was just about to say is I think the vendor permissioning may become easier as MLSs figure out agent and broker permissioning. Like right now, you can have data shares, for example, that are one additional solution to if a group of MLSs can't figure out how to merge together, they might do a data share. But a lot of times what doesn't get dealt with then are the IDX agreements or generally the permissioning.
Right.
I can see those listings inside the MLS system, but what can I do with them outside of that? I think a big thing in the industry over the next coming years will be expanding these kinds of agreements to say, I just need to belong to one MLS and now I get access to a much broader pool of data that I can also use and authorize a cloud CMA to utilize. I shouldn't have to necessarily become a member of, 20 MLSs in order to use the data from there for cloud CMA if they're in a regional agreement. So I think agent and broker permissioning will go a long way to solving the vendor permissioning as that scope constantly expands. Because as long as the agent has permission, then that means the vendor should have, or broker has permission, right. Then the vendor should have permission.
No, that's I've never looked at it that way, but you're exactly right. So it just makes it even harder. There's no quick solutions on that thing. So
I could easily see where that's where solutions from outside of the MLS, it may be that MLSs can't solve that problem, given the current structure, political pressures, et cetera, et cetera. It may be that they don't, but that may be where somebody else can help kind of create a structure over the top that helps them keep their identity, keep who they are, but yet solve that permissioning problem in a grander way.
Right. 20 years now, right? What drives you now?
Well, I think for me personally, and I think for the company, I guess to the extent that I run the company, we're an employee-owned company. And so literally all the employees own FBS, and it's called an employee stock ownership plan or an ESOP. And we're just a little bit, it was formed in 2005. So it's about 12 years old, which is, it's entered the mature phase of our organization. But we have to look now towards developing leadership within our organization for the long haul, right? So we really are focused on that. And for me personally, what excites me is saying, hey, we're creating, you know, owners with our real estate software, homeowners, but we're also creating owners within our company. And I really am laser focused on building that leadership team within our company for the next 20, 40 years.
Right.
So, you know, we've been around for 40 years and totally intend to be there for another 40. And my job right now is to make sure that that happens. And we've got an awesome team of people that it's really fun to work with them. And it's just going to be super cool to see how they evolve the next level of the company and really prove out our model. Maybe we've proven it over 40 years.
but it's always changing. A little bit.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and the industry is always changing.
It's technology.
And
right?
So being able to prove that your business can constantly renew itself, that's the key. What we've always been about. I used to say this when I first started at FBS. You know, it was late 90s and I was hiring young people to build a web-based system, which frankly, at that time was crazy.
Nobody was building enterprise software
on top of the web. I mean, that just wasn't happening. And so we were a leader then. And I said, yeah, our company's been around for 20 years because we had been at that time in the late 90s. And I said, we're really a 20-year startup. And that was a phrase that I think a lot of the people we were hiring resonated with. It was like, cool, it's a new company, but they've been around for a while.
And I still use that.
And honestly,
now you're a 40-year startup.
Yeah, we've reinvented ourselves several times, and we continue to do that. I mean, mobile over the last 3 or 4 years has been huge. I mean, we've poured tons of capital into that, and it's such an exciting time where so much is going on with mobile. That, you know, now it's sort of cliche in some ways to say, well, what's the most important thing? Mobile. Of course it is. But I think especially from the MLS perspective, it's transforming what's going on. And daily usage of those products is amazing to watch. I mean, it's so exciting. So we're constantly changing. And you have to build that into your culture to allow the company to continually embrace that. And I think that's where we are, where I am and what excites me about being in this industry. I'm very confident that realtors, that the process of buying and selling real estate is going to be different, but still have professionals guiding it. And we're going to be there for those professionals doing that. That's our job. And so I look forward to the next 20 and beyond, for sure.
Yeah, I have the similar things with, you know, like you talk about reinvention. Like there's a thing I've been saying to everybody at some meetings and stuff is that I want to kill the CMA. Right? We have to be the ones that kill the CMA.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Right? Because it's going to happen, right? And if it's not us, we're going to be the big losers on it, right? We have to kind of show our customers why the CMA is dead.
Yeah.
Right? I say that as a phrase because, you know, that's our flagship product, right? But it's not going to be lasting forever. So we've got to be the guys that kind of, you know, that come up with that, right? So that's kind of a driving thing with me is I'm always thinking about like, what is that next thing that's, you know, that, okay, I want to be in a presentation. We just killed the CMA and here's why, and here's what what would you want to use now? Right. I don't know what the hell that is. Right. Right. But that kind of in my head, like I want to be that. Like you say, I mean, you have to reinvent yourself. You have to come up with those things. It's that little bit of that innovator's dilemma, right? Yep. Of doing that stuff. So I don't know what it's going to be, but that's in my head. I'm always thinking about how do I kill this damn thing?
Well, and I think the cool thing about like where I want to be, you know, as the leader of FBS is, and I don't know if it's me getting older or what, but it's about people and building those relationships. And then because the new idea is going to not come from us,
right?
Yeah, yeah, and totally. And so, you know, I want to build that into who we are as a company and have those relationships. And that's what's exciting about staying in the business is just having those relationships, being able to collaborate with great companies like WR and all of our MLS partners. It's an exciting thing, but it's about the people and it's about those relationships. And that's what makes it worthwhile.
Yeah. So this has been great, dude. I mean, so how do people reach you? I mean, what, you're on Twitter, Facebook. I mean, what's the best way?
Yeah, sure. So it's pretty much wherever I am. It's M Wurzer, W-U-R-Z-E-R. And so it's at M Wurzer for Twitter or all the various social platforms, I suppose. And my email is mwurzer@fleximls.com.
Yeah, I hope you you follow through on this more writing.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really to me, like I said in the beginning there, it inspired me to start Vendor Alley.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I think it, you know, it really a lot of the MLS community and everybody took note of like, you know, the post, thoughtful posts that you kind of wrote. So I hope that continues. I hope you kind of do that.
Yeah. Thank you. I will try. And maybe that'll be my 2017 goal.
All right. Well, Lobby Bar.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get out of here.
All right.
Bye.